We hope you enjoy the following presentation of Occult Preparations for a New Age, Part 1 by Dane Rudjar. This recording is 43 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudjar Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudjar. All material is copyrighted by Leila Rudjar Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudjar, visit www.rudjarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudjar, visit www.rudjaraudioarchives.com. And now, Dane Rudjar.
We hear, of course, a great deal about the New Age. But very often, people who speak about it, even who use the term Aquarian Age, have a very fuzzy and uncertain and unclear idea as to why we speak of ages in general, and why of a new age, and what was the meaning of the old age, what could be expected to be the meaning of this new age, and so on. What I want to try to do today is to try to clarify some of the issues involved in the concept of a new age, Aquarian Age if you want, and particularly on the basis of that elucidation, to try to present a picture of where we stand, both collectively as mankind, and of course, though I will not be able to go into that much, as an individual person. Now, as some of you undoubtedly know, the idea of the Aquarian Age, why Aquarian? The idea of Aquarian Age is based on the fact, an astronomical fact, that there is a cycle which we call the precession of the equinoxes, a cycle which lasts about 26,000 years. Now, the exact duration of that cycle is not too certain. It probably changes throughout the millennia of the past. It has changed. It will probably change. There are all sorts of factors involved, and it is difficult to know exactly what will happen during large period of thousands of years like that. Besides, there is another factor which complicates a little the situation. I am not going to try to go into astronomical detail as to what the precession of the equinoxes are, but I want to simply say this. The reason why there is such a cycle is that, as you probably know, the poles of the Earth, the polar axis of the Earth, does not always point to the same star in the sky. What is the North Star today was not the North Star 10,000 years ago, will not be the North Star 5,000 years hence. The planet as a whole kind of wobbles in its motion as it moves around the sun, much like a top, you know, little playthings, whose the top make a circle as it revolves. Now, that circle of the polar axis takes about 26,000 years to be completed. Probably it is less than that, and data have been very conflicting. It may be not much more than 24,500 a year. The only point is that the equinox is also related to the position of the ecliptic, the path of the Earth around the Sun. And that changes also. So you have a rather confused situation. And if you try to find authorities, so-called, in the occult world or even in the astronomical world, you will find various answers. But the most generally accepted idea, which may have to be revised in some cases, is that it is the general cycle lasts between 25,000 and 26,000 years. And the simplest way to speak of it is to think of the 26,000 year cycle. Now that cycle has been divided into 12 sections, like the zodiac, the sign of the zodiac, 12 sign of the zodiac, because it deals with the motion of the spring equinox through the zodiac in that 26,000 year. And we are now at a point where, more or less at a point, where at the spring equinox, the sun is entering or will enter the constellation of Aquarius. Now, of course, the sun passed through Aquarius every year for a month's time in the sky. But the point is that at the spring equinox, when spring begins, the sun is not always entering the same part, the same constellation. And now we are at a point where it is going to enter that constellation Aquarius, and therefore we speak of the Aquarian age. The last cycle, therefore, which we are concluding, was called the Piscean age, because the sun at the springtime, at the equinox of spring, was located then in the constellation Pisces. I mean, if you drew a line between the Earth and the Sun and prolonged it there, you would, on the spring equinox, you would find it hitting some star in the constellation Pisces. So that is why it is called the Aquarian age. Now, if you divide 26,000 or about that, or a little less, 20, by 12, you have a period of about 2,150, 160 years. That constitutes an age, a zodiacal age. Or sometimes in the past, they spoke of that cycle as the great year or the cosmic year. And therefore, an age is 1 month of that cosmic year, you see. Now, the question that should come in the mind of the people, but sometimes doesn't, is why do we pay attention to those cycles, and what does that mean? How can we use that knowledge of cycles? And of course, there are an immense variety of cycles. There's the cycle of the day when the Earth turns around its axis, you know. There's the cycle of the year when the Earth revolves around the Sun. There is the cycle of the lunation from new moon to the next new moon. All those things are cycles which are important and are the basis of astrology. Now, why are cycles important? The idea is that we are dealing, when you are a human being particularly, who are supposed to be conscious and aware of understanding the laws and the patterns of events throughout history, we are dealing with two kind of levels of understanding. We are living every day our existential life from event to event, from happening to happening. That is what I would call the existential level. We live at that level, we act there, we think, we feel, and all that at that level, everyday life. But as we are able to think more abstractly, more generally, as we are able to understand the laws of life and of nature and of the universe, we begin to realize that we live in an ordered world which has definite patterns, definite structure, and that if we understand how those patterns operate, how the laws operate, how the structure of the cosmos operate, then we are able to give to the events of our everyday life a meaning which otherwise they would not have. So that we are dealing with two different realms, the existential realm where everyday life occurs, and we deal with what I might call the archetypal realm, where we deal with cycles, with large structures, which are cosmic, in the sense that we have nothing to do with them. We are operating in those cycles as animals or plants and all that. We would not be conscious they exist. We would relate instinctively to them. We would mate, we would change the color of our skin or our plumage, or grow buds and seeds and all that instinctively without knowing it. But as human beings, we have the capacity to be aware, to be conscious of all those basic changes and to give them meaning. Consciousness, the ability to give meaning to the facts of existence, is the characteristic of a human kingdom. And that is both our greatness and also our responsibility, and sometimes our tragedy, because we can misuse that understanding and therefore make a remarkable mess of our existence. Now, the idea is that if you understand those cycles and the structure of those cosmic events, those cosmic patterns, we can live a life which will be far more significant than otherwise. We can live consciously. All what the esoteric tradition of mankind, and particularly today, theosophy and other discipline of thinking, and that includes the higher form of astrology in which I am interested. I am not interested in fortune telling or anything of that kind, or prediction of that kind. All those techniques aim at enabling man to live a fully conscious and significant life, to understand what is happening, why it is happening, and to give a positive response to whatever we are facing in our everyday life. Now, if we do not know those larger patterns of cycles, laws of nature, and so on, we may give some very fine response to any confrontation or opportunity, but we will not know exactly what they mean in terms of our whole existence, in terms of our whole life, in terms of why we are here on this earth and what is the reason for our existence, what is, in Hindu term, our dharma, our truth of being, the why we are born. So that by using that archetypal knowledge of great cycle and so on, we are able to do something which is really human, which is therefore conscious, significant, and purposeful. So that what we are doing with that knowledge of archetypal pattern structures is by seeing how the events of our life fit into those patterns, where they fit, how they are related to one to the other in terms of those larger cycles. And when we do that, you see, it changes completely the meaning of our existence. It changes the meaning of anything that happened to us, because we see them in terms of a much larger frame of reference, large, broader sight, broader vision, than if we just simply responded to them with the feeling, oh, that's nice, I enjoy it, this is bad, I run away from it. It is a difference between feeling and consciousness. You can live beautifully by your feeling, but you can also make a mess of it. And in a period where there is a great deal of crisis, where there is a great deal of pressure in the world, to live by one's feeling is very often a matter of bringing to oneself into a very chaotic situation, because we are in a chaotic situation collectively. But if you understand with your mind, not your little mind of intellect, the kind of thing that you learn in school, and all those little scientific technology and all those things like that, not that kind, but the mind which deals with those large cosmic structures and cosmic cycles, if you can operate with that, you can bring to your existence a depth, a width, a deep understanding and the meaning of it, which you will not get in any other way. And that is therefore the reason why we can use certain aspects of astrology, and why we deal also in esoteric philosophy, in theosophy and all that, we deal with such large cycle. Now, the question is that we have to try to understand where we stand. Where we stand collectively as humanity, because we are constantly impressed by, sometimes compressed and often depressed, and not too unfrequently suppressed, by what is happening in the world of collectivity, our nation, our churches, our political structures, and so on. Now, as we will see in a moment, some important change took place in the last 2 or 3 centuries, and particularly at the end of the 19th century, which were, in a sense, the result of the Industrial Revolution, which brought to mankind tremendous changes in its way of life all over the world, and particularly in the Western world. Now, that Industrial Revolution, and later on the Electronic Revolution, in turn were the manifestation of the fact that mankind was developing a new level of intellectual activity, a strong capacity for analysis, for making tools, instruments, gadgets, and therefore using both its inventive manual capacity and its new kind of intellect, which produced algebra and the calculus and all the very abstract things of modern science, we were able to see a universe very different from the universe of the past. But unfortunately, there is a great deal of inertia in the collective mentality of mankind. And so when people in end of the 19th century began to try to realize the implication, all through the 19th century, even the 18th century, began to realize the implications of the changes which were taking place, and trying to bring out something of the understanding of the great laws and the great cycle of the universe, they were met with a great deal of misunderstanding and opposition and sometimes accusations and oppressions and so forth. The interesting thing, of course, that we have always to realize, and it is very important when you deal with occult matters, theosophy, astrology, and so on, is that while that archetypal world of the cosmos retains its identity as it is always, still we Earth people have to each time reinterpret it in terms of what our stand is at any time. And we will find, as you see in a moment, that there are certain cycles, and at the beginning of each cycle, there are attempts to reinterpret our relationship to those great factors in the universe. And that reinterpretation has to depend on the kind of mentality which is existing in the world at that time. Because no one can be taught something which is completely alien to what that person thinks or feels at that time. So that many of the things that occurred at the end of the 19th century were conditioned by the mentality of the Western world, which was the dominant part of humanity at that time. And I don't know if you realize how dogmatic, how narrow, how materialistic was the mentality of those days, how great the pride of Western people, like English people, French people, German people, American people, in their own culture, in their own tradition. And therefore, much of what was said and given at the time had to be polarized by the misunderstanding, as it were, or the materialistic type of understanding of humanity at that period. So that now that we have moved to a different situation, that science has changed a great deal, that we are aware of the unity of mankind, not merely as an ideal, but as a concrete fact, through our TV, through our radio, through our long travels and so on, we are able to get a somewhat different kind of perspective on those great cycles and how to use them in our personal and collective life. Now, perhaps I should try to give a very basic idea of certain dates which will try to help you to understand where we stand at the present time in terms of the New Age, Old Age, and so on. As I said, it is a very confused situation, and as I see it, the only way that you can really try to get clarity to it is to try to interpret the historical fact that we know so that we have a way to, as it were, tie together those two worlds, the archetypal world and the historical or existential world. To be brief, my concept, which I have developed at great length in a book called Astrological Timing, is that the so-called Piscean Age began around 100 BC, and it's not a year, it's a period of at least a number of years. And therefore, if it lasts about 2160, it will end somewhere in the middle of the next century, which then would be, from that point of view, the beginning of the Aquarian Age. You can divide that period of 2160 years into different sections. And those of you who know about astrology know that in astrology we use, of course, 360 degrees to the zodiac, and that every 10 degrees is divide a sign of the zodiac which lasts 30 degrees into three sections. And that threefold division is very important and very significant. And I, one of the main reasons why I came to those dates, and all that by some strange coincidence in a way, is that you can divide that Piscean age into three important sections, which are definitely related to the relation of Christianity to the rest of the world. And the Piscean age started, more or less, with the Christian dispensation, so-called, or which probably was preceded by something which were the prelude to it, or possibly the teacher of righteousness of the Essene, or whatever it was, and at a physical level, the building of the Roman Empire, which is the existential factor which had a very definite relationship with that archetypal factor, the beginning of a new age. Now, my conception is that actually what happened at the time was that we started not only a new age of 2000 years, but we actually started a whole 26,000 year cycle. And sometimes I have spoken of it as the cycle which was animated, energized, illumined by what I call the Christ impulse. Not in a technical, religious, theological sense, but in the sense of a new type of power which was released in mankind and which made it possible for every human being to find within himself the God within, the center, the spiritual center of their being, and to find it consciously. That is the Christ center. That is the center which the Rosicrucian speaks when he speaks of the rose that bloom at the heart of the cross. And you can make a symbolical picture of it, perhaps more than symbolical, if you realize that if a man stand up with his arm erected, it forms a cross, and at the center where the horizontal and the vertical meet, there is the heart center in the spine, and that is there where Krishna, Christ, has its essential and eternal abode. This is the point where our deepest will, our heart center, heart in a, not in a feeling way, but in a deep spiritual way, resides. And the awakening of that center, the blooming of that rose, was the great fact which began the Piscean age and probably began that much larger cycle of 26,000 years. Now, if you can think of 26,000 years before, you go back to the beginning of a period of which history knows very little, but still we have expression of it, we have manifestation of it in some of the beautiful painting, cave painting, in the Cro-Magnon people in southern France, in Africa, and so on, which probably were the end of a still preceding period. It may be at that time where the Egyptian, the old prehistoric Egyptian civilization reached its apex, or at this first high manifestation. It's even possible that it is the time when the pyramids were built, because according to many occultists, the date which is given by Orientalists is only about 26,000 years too late, because it's calculated on the position of the stars to the chamber of initiation there at the center of the pyramid. But the same position occurred every 26,000 years. Anyway, I won't go into that. But The cycle before 100 BC, I think, has a large meaning of cultivation. That was the cycle where agriculture and the cultivation of the human psyche trying to make mankind emerge more definitely from the biological super animal kingdom into the really human conscious and significant kingdom. This cycle of cultivation is now being followed by a cycle of 26,000 years, which perhaps the keynote may be universalization. And it is the cycle that we are acting upon within, and it had to start with that, what I call the Christ impulse, because in order to have a universalization, you have to have also individualization. You see, when you are dealing with groups, with tribes which are local, which are grow in so local situation, in a special land, completely bound to the land, almost as bound to a land as an ovum is bound to the womb, completely depending on climacteric and vegetable and fauna and flora and all that for existence. You had the keynote there is to cultivate that land, to cultivate that particular condition. But the moment you are able to see that the planet is a whole, and we have known it for a long time, but it is only in the last few years that we see it with our eyes, in TV at least, and of course some of the astronauts have seen it with their own eyes and have great experience from it. Everything, in order to be universalized, has to depend on the individual. The individual who is not bound to any particular situation on Earth, but who realize the wholeness of existence on Earth, the wholeness of life. So the idea of wholeness, the holistic approach. I was one of the first ones to speak of holistic astrology, looking at yourself as a whole. Now there is holistic medicine, holistic this, holistic that. But this idea of wholeness is a keynote which has to be stressed and which depends on the possibility for a man to find its own center and to be conscious there and to say, I am in a conscious way, but in a conscious way which is not limited to itself, which is not exclusivistic, but which is sees itself as related to all other I within that larger whole of humanity. Therefore, the concept of universalization. Now, during that age of the Piscean age that we are ending now, the main factor was the idea of transcendence. And that's why you have so much stress in Christianity and in many other religions on the idea of transcendence. You had to transcend the biological factors which bind you to the earth. You have to transcend your attachment to the land, your attachment to your country, to a particular religion, to a particular class, particular existential situation. You had to do that in order to be able to think universally, to think in terms of large cosmic factor or large cycles, you see. So the whole point up to today has been the transcendence. And of course, the inertia of the attachment to the land, to the particular condition, to your own ego, which is a reaction to that particular condition, has been tremendous. So as Jesus said, when he said, I do not come to bring peace on earth, but a sword. The idea of severance, the idea of transcendence. You have to break down your attachment to the biological and to the local and the personal ego factors. And that means to a particular religious tradition, to a particular political tradition, and so on. And so we are now supposedly a little far away in that process of transcendence. And the main value of modern science, it has done much harm to mankind, but it has had one great value, which is to make transcendence possible by helping all human beings to know, to feel, to experience their wholeness as mankind, and to see the earth as a globe. The greatest achievement of modern science is to have enabled some human being, and by vicariously all human beings, to see the earth as a little globe, you know, and therefore to concretely, actually, existentially realize that all men are one. You see. And so now we are entering the new cycle, the Aquarian Age cycle, which keynote, as I see it, will be planetarization. And in a certain sense, the prelude to that age has already occurred. We are in it. But it will take a while still in order to have it concretely manifest. And here we come to that concept, which is, I think, a very important concept today, the concept of transition. According to the old Hindu idea, every cycle ends and begins with a transitional period, which is one-tenth of the complete duration of that cycle. So if a cycle, say, is 100 years, then the transition period would be 10 years at the end and 10 years in the beginning. If a cycle is 2,160 years, like one of those ages that I'm speaking of, then the transition period would be 216 years before the change and 216 years afterwards. If you want to be symbolical about, and it is a very valuable and significant symbol, the cycle, that period of transition and the end of the cycle, you can speak of it as a seed period of the cycle. The seed being the last product of a cycle of vegetation, which contains in potentiality the whole pattern, the whole structure of the new cycle, of the, what will happen during the next cycle. Then the first period of which begins the cycle, you can speak of it as the germination period, the little germ which comes out of the seed when that seed breaks up and germinate, and then the little rootlet first and the little germ came out. The difficulty, you see, about speaking about cycle is that it is very difficult to know sometimes existentially when a cycle begins. When are you born? You see that famous problem that astrologers have to face. Are you born at conception? Are you born when the heart starts beating? Are you born at the first breath and so on? When does a business firm begin its life? Is it the moment the first committee deciding to have an organization, or is it when the Treasury of State put its stamp on the incorporation paper and so on? So when does a cycle start? When does a year start? You know, we start the year the 1st of January, which is the solstice of winter, when the sun begins to move northwards in declination and the day begins to get longer and longer. Most people in the past started it with the vernal equinox, because it was the time when, after the long winter, suddenly life sprang anew in a concrete, actual, tangible, existential form. And some people, like the Hebrew people, started it in the fall equinox, which is the time when the seed begins, the seed falls into the ground. Yes. So you can have a cycle starting at various periods. I don't know if you know about the Baha'i movement, which is, to my mind, one of the most significant things that happened last century. I may mention it slightly later on. Started their year in at the spring equinox, and they say that the new age began in 1844. Well, yes, if you want to put it that way, you might say that because from my calculation that was the beginning of the transition, the beginning of the seed period of the Piscean age, you see. And the seed, in a certain sense, from a certain point of view, can be also considered as a symbol of what in India, in occult circle, you know of as an avatar, or some other religion we speak of it as a divine manifestation. That is the seed, the seed fall into the ground. Potentially the new life is there, because the new life requires the relationship between the seed, which is the repository of life, energy, and the ground, which is the humus of the past, which has to be incorporated in that germ if it develops into a plant. So when the seed begins, the relationship between the life, the new life in a way, and the old humus, you see, start in a certain sense. Or you can say that it starts only when a new society begins with new institution and all that, which would be the beginning of spring, you see. Now, the way I have spoken of in this 100-year cycle, when I spoke about ending in 2060 AD, I was speaking more of the spring kind of thing, the beginning of a new society, the beginning of new type of institutions. But in a certain sense, you can, the transition toward that is just as important, and we are still in that transition. It is important to realize that before anything can unfold and develop concretely on Earth, there must be a two-fold process. On one hand, spirit comes down into manifestation. On the other hand, the Earth evolves gradually into a new possibility of responding to what has descended from above. Yes. So that if you take 1844, 46, 48, that period as the beginning of the transition, the seed period, which will lead to the new Aquarian age, you have on two factors. You have the descent of a great cosmic power, avataric power, and you have, on the other hand, through the Industrial Revolution, you see, the beginning of a process which make it possible to achieve that planetarization of consciousness and of a planetary society and world society, which is the goal of the future. So that the transition period, you see, the beginning of the transition is in a certain sense also the beginning of the cycle. And you can, if you want to have a very highly concrete and cultural expression, you can say, well, let's not take the spring, let's not take the spring, but let us say the time when a culture blossomed forth in all its glory and beauty. And then you will have the summer, and you can say, let's start again, you know, so that you can say that the beginning of Christianity, or the great drama of the fight between love and violence, which took place in Palestine and became crystallized in the personage of Jesus, that thing manifested in the spring at the beginning of the great medieval period and it manifests in its summer, blossoming in the classical period of the 16th century, the great Gothic and the early Renaissance period. So you can see all those things there. The important thing is that you understand what you are talking about. And that's unfortunately what most people don't do. You see, because they get...
This is the end of Occult Preparations for a New Age, Part 1, by Dane Rudyar. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudyar Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyar at www.rudyarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyaraudioarchives.com.